from the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
The Attorney General makes a trip to Capitol Hill. Egypt continues to be a strong ally, and the definition of equality continues to get more fuzzy. That's all coming up on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and homeschool dad. On Thursday of this week, which was the National Day of Prayer, Senator Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee joined Tony Perkins to talk about Attorney General William Barr's testimony before the Senate Judiciary Committee, of which Senator Blackburn is a member. Here's FRC President Tony Perkins.
Listen to this exchange between Democratic Senator Dick Blumenthal of Connecticut and Attorney General Barr when the senator asked Barr to offer more detail about the conversation he had with Mueller after learning that the special counsel had taken issue with Barr's overview.
His complaint to you is about your characterization of the report.
The letter speaks for itself.
This letter was an extraordinary act. A career prosecutor rebuking the Attorney General of the United States, memorializing in writing. I know of no other instance of that happening.
I don't consider Bob at this stage a career prosecutor. He's had a career as a prosecutor.
Well, he's a very eminent.
He was the head of the FBI for 12 years.
He's a career law enforcement professional.
But he was also a political appointee, and he was a political appointee with me at the Department of Justice. The letter's a bit snitty, and I think it was probably written by one of his staff people.
Did you make a memorandum of your conversation?
Huh?
Did you make a memorandum?
No, I didn't.
Or did anyone else?
What?
Did anyone, either you or anyone on your staff, memorialize your conversation with Robert Mueller?
Yes.
Who did that?
There were notes taken of the call.
May we have those notes?
No.
Why not?
Why should you have them?
Here's a little bit more about what Nancy Pelosi had to say this morning about yesterday's hearing.
The Attorney General of the United States of America was not telling the truth to the Congress of the United States. That's a crime.
Well, joining me now to offer her analysis is Senator Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee, who serves on the Judiciary Committee in the Senate and was in the hearing yesterday. Senator Blackburn, welcome back to Washington Watch.
It is so good to be with you. Thanks so much for having me back on, Tony, and thank you for taking time to recognize this as our National Day of Prayer.
Well, we're looking forward to it. We had a great event at the White House earlier today and looking forward to the one at the Capitol tonight. But I first want to talk about this crime scene that Nancy Pelosi described in the Senate Judiciary Committee yesterday.
I have to tell you, it was really something quite remarkable because everyone accepts Bob Mueller's report. It is out there. If they have been listening, if they have been reading, they will see that there is no obstruction or collusion or coordination or conspiracy. And this is just a continuation of the Democrats' efforts to try to say Donald Trump should never have won that race. And during my questioning, I turned the attention to the fact that this is a complete investigation by 19 attorneys, 22 months, over $25 million, and millions of pages of records, and they found nothing. And yet, they continue to go back in there and say, there's got to be something there. But what it points out is that there is a culture of a clique there within the FBI, and that is a rotten to the core culture. This is a group of people that thought they knew more than everybody else. They knew how to manipulate the law, even though they are sworn to uphold the law. And so they set out on the path that they thought they could do this and nobody would ever find out. And guess what? People found out, and now the American people are learning a whole lot about these people that carried out this. Maybe that's where the crime and the wrongdoing is, because after all this time and money, it was not Donald Trump and the Trump campaign.
Well, Senator Blackburn, the Democratic members of the Senate Judiciary Committee had the opportunity to question the Attorney General, did they not?
Oh, of course they did. But they didn't want to talk about the report. They didn't want to talk about Russian interference. What they wanted to talk about was Bill Barr and try to discredit him when he is there talking about the report that the special counsel turned over. So I will tell you this. Senator Graham said today, we are done with Bob Mueller and this report. We are moving on to figure out how we got to this place in the first place. How right. did we get to this point where you have a group of people that take a political oppo research document, they misrepresent it, a FISA warrant is granted, and an American citizen and his family and their campaign are spied upon?
Well, over in the House, in the House Judiciary Committee, a little bit of theatrics today, Jerry Nadler, the chairman of New York, he wanted the attorney general to show up over there and testify, but he wanted the staff attorneys to question the attorney general, to which the attorney general said that would be inappropriate. I'm not going to do that. The justification from Chairman Nadler was that he wanted to have skilled attorneys question Attorney General Barr. So I'm just wondering, I guess he's saying that his Senate colleagues on the Democratic side of the aisle are not skilled attorneys and don't know how to ask questions?
That seems to be what he is saying, if he thinks that his members can't handle the questioning if they were focused on the root causes of the issue. If they were focused on how did we get to this point in the first place, how is it that we have this this document that ended up being used to receive a FISA warrant, then maybe they would have some. If they wanted to look at what happened with Russia and look at what happened with Twitter, where you had right. all of these multiple fake accounts that were set up. If you wanted to look at Facebook and the Facebook ads that were paid for by foreign entities, you know, Facebook should have known when they were being paid in rubles for ads that were being placed, that this was not something that was being done by American organizations. So the question there would be, did they willfully turn a blind eye? Is that what they did, to turn a blind eye, or did they just, were they not watching at all?
Mm-hmm. Well, could it also be, Senator Blackburn, that the reason they don't want to talk about the report, they don't want to talk about Russia anymore, they don't want to talk about this, because now that these layers are being peeled back, it is pointing to their allies. It may go back to Hillary Clinton and the Democratic Party, and they what they thought was going to take down Donald Trump may, in fact, take down some of their own.
Well, and I think that is true because, Tony, you're exactly right. We have to remember every single bit of this happened on Barack Obama's watch. It happened in his DOJ with his political appointees. This did not happen with Donald Trump's appointees, but this was in the Barack Obama, Eric Holder, Loretta Lynch-led FBI DOJ.
Is there anything, in your opinion, Senator Blackburn, that will satisfy the Democrats on this? When it comes to President Trump.
It will not. There's nothing that will satisfy them on this because they are furious that they lost the 2016 election. And you've got a lot of angry people out there that are on their side and on their side of the aisle. And so, Tony, they're not going to give this up. They're going to try to carry this out until 2020.
So, Senator, when you talk about Senator Graham saying that, you know, he's finished, that we're moving on, but there are some issues here pertaining to Hillary Clinton, pertaining to Barack Obama under their watch. I think a lot of Americans want those things actually to be looked into, and those that violated the law back then under that administration held accountable. Is there a chance that we may
precisely,
investigate that?
Yes. And Senator Graham said today is that he has written Justice Roberts and asked him to look into the issue with the FISA court. And we anticipate that he will do that. We think we will continue to look at how the FBI, and I talked specifically to General Barr yesterday in my questioning about the culture and what is he going to do to restore trust and integrity in the culture at the FBI and DOJ. Because in Tennessee, they will tell me they feel like this should never, ever, ever happen to any other presidential candidate again, ever. Mm-hmm. And this, you know, this is where they are and how they view it. And they want to figure out how it happened. How could it possibly be that this took place? And how could these individuals within the FBI have carried this out for so many months and have had all of this communication and nobody ever stepped in and said, you cannot do this. It is a breach of trust with the agency and with the American people who pay your salary. You're fired, which is exactly what they should have done.
Senator, almost out of time. Very quickly, one last question for you. As you heard from the clip earlier, Nancy Pelosi today saying that William Barr should be charged with a crime because he lied to Robert Barr, William, I'm sorry, get all these names mixed up, that he lied to Congress. Did he tell the truth or did he lie? You were there.
I was there. He told the truth. He answered every question that came to him. He stood up at the beginning of the hearing. He was sworn in, and then he proceeded with the hearing. It is just the Democrats did not like the answers they were given yesterday.
All right, Senator Marsha Blackburn, thanks so much for joining us
today. Thanks, Tony. Bye-bye.
You can find out more about Senator Blackburn when you visit tonyperkins.com. You can also find a link there to watch the National Day of Prayer service at the U.S. Capitol. That website, once more, is tonyperkins.com.
Here's an exclusive vacation opportunity for you and your family with Tony Perkins and Family Research Council. Discover Alaska with Tony and FRC. You will love every moment of this unforgettable experience. Get a personal, behind-the-scenes look at what Family Research Council is doing in our nation's capital. Talk with and hear directly from FRC President Tony Perkins, General Jerry Boykin, Ken Blackwell, and Michelle Bachman. Explore Juneau, Ketchikan, Hubbard Glacier, Sitka, and even British Columbia. This is no ordinary vacation. You'll be vacationing with the FRC family and a lot of new friends. Be rejuvenated as we vacation together, deepening our relationships with God and each other. Don't just get away. Get away with purpose on Family Research Council's Alaska Cruise, July 7 to 14. Call 844-872-5155 to register today or visit us online at frc.org/Alaska. That's frc.org/Alaska.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. You know, a lot of our representatives in Washington, D.C. learn about areas of the world that are of interest to them. But it's an entirely different thing when a representative actually grows up in a foreign country and then gets to speak to that country's issues. Representative Jeff Fortenberry of Nebraska is one of those people, and he joined FRC President Tony Perkins on Wednesday to talk about one of our allies, Egypt. Here now is Tony Perkins.
Congressman Fortenberry, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, thanks for having me on the program. Appreciate the opportunity to talk to you. Appreciate your perspective and what you do as well.
Well, thank you. And, you know, you and I have spoken a number of times about Egypt. You actually spent some time there growing up in Egypt, and you've gone back and spent time there with the current president and other officials there. There's reason for promise with Egypt, but they still have some challenges ahead of them.
Well, I think that's a fair characterization. One of the dynamics in Washington is that we tend to be very, very hard on friends. And this is why I authored that piece on Egypt called The Forgotten Friend. And thank you for mentioning it, by the way. And it's on my website if anybody wants to go deeper into the issue. The reality is, for instance, there has been a 40-year-old peace treaty between Israel and Egypt that was gained through great sacrifice by the leaders of both of those countries. In fact, the president of Egypt, Anwar Sadat, gave his life.
Right.
He was assassinated because of this peace treaty. By the Muslim Brotherhood. Egypt and Israel had fought four wars since 1948, the last one being 1973. And in fact, when I was a young man, I entered the Sinai Desert in that space where the 73 war was fought, and I saw the hand-painted sign that said, here was the war, here is the peace. And it was one of the early formative moments for me as a young person that I think instilled in me the ideals of possibility that are gained through sacrificial leadership. And so I tend to see Egypt in this lens. It's not to in any way diminish the problems that they have, the human rights issues, the nature of governance, and the protection of religious minorities. However, Egypt could have completely collapsed just a few short years ago after there were uprisings in the street. We had the rise of the Muslim Brotherhood President Morsi, and then the destabilization that took place. You think we have problems now in the Middle East? It's unimaginable what it would have happened if Egypt, the largest Arab country in the Middle East, would have collapsed in the chaos. And unimaginable. So you have a military person take power, who now has since been duly elected, named President Sisi. In one of his very first acts, he brought the Coptic Christian Pope, Pope Tewodros, and the Grand Imam from Al-Aqsa University at the Grand Mosque. And he put them both on television next to him and said, we are Egyptians. This is a very, very powerful thing to do, because what he did, which is almost unheard of in the Middle East, is transcend sectoral differences.
Right.
And say, this is who we are. We are a healthy nation of Egyptians. And so this is, again, what we're trying to achieve throughout the Middle East, and yet we constantly poke Egypt in the eye because of, yes, considered problems. But we don't hold that hand of friendship very tightly. And my perspective is we need to be in authentic dialogue and friendship with this very strong ally who has held the peace with Israel at great sacrifice, who is in a transition period of stabilization. And by the way, 88% of the people in Egypt recently voted in the referendum to allow for the extension of the president's term. That's a very significant majority of people saying we need to choose security at this moment and stability in the institution of the presidency. So it's important that we do human rights and religious watch considerations and evaluations. It forces our friends to be attentive to these issues. But in terms of religious freedom and the protection of minority rights, there's a ways to go in Egypt. However, there are substantial protections in place. So the idea here is to affirm what is good and keep working toward what is better.
Yeah, it's in a very important country. You know, Egypt, the largest, 100 million people, they have the ability to influence a large portion of both Africa and the Middle East. So it's a very key ally. So you're absolutely correct. And I think the leadership, it's clear. I've been to Cairo. I was actually there for the opening of the cathedral, and was, in fact, talked to the president briefly, President El-Sisi, at that opening. And I was amazed at how he is trying to use his influence to change the culture, to allow for greater religious freedom. The challenge is, and this is what we found in our report, or stated in our report, is that while, you know, in Cairo there's we see very positive things. When you get out to the rural portions of Egypt, there is major problems as it pertains to religious freedom, as there's anti-Christian mob violence in Upper Egypt. But there's certainly a country that we should be welcoming in and not pushing away. No question about it.
Yeah, you're correct to point out in Upper Egypt, particularly in the area of Minya. We have reports as well of violence against Christians, very real passivity on the part of government in terms of prosecuting those who are guilty of violence against Christians. I recently sent a letter to the Coptic bishop in the area to continue to give him encouragement. In fact, I raised this very point with the foreign minister, who was sitting in my office just a couple of weeks ago, right in front of, in a chair, which is right in front of me right now as I'm talking to you, along with several other key points of tension in the relationship. But the only reason that I can do that is because I'm trying to hold the hand of friendship even tighter. Mm-hmm. We have a very strong military-to-military relationship. As I said, Egypt has held the peace. They are fighting their brand of ISIS in the Sinai Desert. They've got problems along the Libyan border. They're going to great lengths to try to secure that border so terrorist influences don't come from there. They've got problems to the south with Sudan. They're actually entering into an energy agreement with the Israelis. No one knows about any of this stuff. Their robust relationship, security relationship with Israel is real, and yet we'll critique this and that, appropriately so, but in order to have legitimacy, we have to be in authentic dialogue and authentic friendship. And this has been my point of founding the Egyptian Caucus, of trying to leverage my experience as a younger person to try to elevate consciousness about the importance of this ally and to give them the encouragement and sometimes the necessary critique to make changes that are consistent with justice, human rights, human dignity, so their society can flourish even better.
Congressman, thanks so much for joining us. Jeff, great to talk with you again, and we'll encourage people to read your piece. We've got a link to it on our website.
Pleasure, Tony. Thank you.
You can learn more about Representative Fortenberry when you visit TonyPerkins.com. While you're there, I'd encourage you to download the Stand Firm app for your smartphone. It's an easy way to keep up with the topics you care about most, as well as listen to Washington Watch Live. Again, that's TonyPerkins.com.
When you look at what is going on in our country and culture today, do you often ask, what can I do? Well, mark your calendar for the Values Voters Summit on October 11th through 13th in Washington, D.C., and join thousands of Americans just like you who want to change the culture in a way that human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary Mike Pompeo, Kirk Cameron, Dana Loesch, and Ben Carson. In addition, there will be opportunities to meet with organizations and attendees that share a Christian worldview, and informational sessions focused on the topics of life, religious liberty, the LGBT movement, national security, the realities of socialism, and more. On October 11th through 13th, stand with thousands of Values voters to restore our great nation. Registration is now open. Don't miss the early bird price of $99. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. We've talked previously about the Equality Act, a nefarious piece of legislation making its way through Congress that would make certain people more equal than others. On Wednesday, Representative Greg Stube of Florida joined Tony to talk about the Equality Act. Here's FRC President Tony Perkins.
Congressman Stube, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks for having me.
This, you know, sounds good. Equality Act. Everybody wants equality. But that's really not what this is about. Some people are more equal than others under this bill.
Yeah, the first thing when you first start to read the definition section, it actually changes the word women or woman to be any person. I mean, I just filed an amendment as it related to female athletes and females competing in female athletic events and not allowing biological males who quote unquote identify as a female to compete against women in women athletic events. On April 29th, Martina Navratilova, Professor Coleman, and the Washington Post did an opinion article supporting the very amendment that I filed, and it was, you know, knocked down on party lines in the committee. It's just interesting to me that it's actually going against the very fabric of women and their diversity and their being able to compete in their own athletic events, and now men who say they identify as a woman are going to be able to compete in these events against women.
It's interesting you bring up that aspect because there's a lot of pushback on that. In fact, it's been interesting to see the opposition that has kind of come together against this feminist for the very reasons that you were articulating, that this is anti-woman in many, many ways. In addition to that, as I mentioned, it's anti-religious freedom. Kristen Wagner, Senior Vice President of Alliance Defending Freedom, said the Equality Act would undermine, quote, the fundamental freedoms of speech, religion, and conscience that the First Amendment guarantees for every citizen. Is that overstating the challenge here?
No, it's blurring the lines of what your sex is and your gender. I mean, it's completely blurring the lines. I mean, I gave examples in the committee of actually, you know, one of the Democrats said that, oh, this is just hypothetical. And I came back to her and I said, well, I talked about this. You obviously didn't hear me. Let me give you a couple examples. CC Telfer, a biological male who won 3 titles in the Northeast 10 championships for women's track and received the most outstanding track athlete award. Fallon Fox, a biological male who shattered female fighter Tamika Brent's eye socket and gave her a concussion, and Brent said she has never felt so overpowered in her life. Gabriel Ludwig, a 50-year-old, 6'8", 230-pound biological male, who led the Mission College women's basketball team to a national championship with the most rebounds. And there was another example this past yesterday. One of the staffers handed me an example yesterday of a weightlifting event where it was a biological man who shattered the women that were competing, and one of the women that competed were quoted as saying, this is unfair. We're competing against a biological male who obviously, and there's tons of facts and science to back this up, are physically stronger than females.
And this affects a lot of people in terms of scholarships and where they're going
absolutely.
To college. So, I mean, this is a far reaching, but it's hard to carve out these one particular areas when you start playing with this whole issue of the redefinition of biology and gender. There's really no stopping it.
Yeah, when you blur the lines as to what a woman is and what a man is, and when there's no now real lines as to who can and cannot compete in a female event, then you're going to have these challenges.
Yeah, I think I could have been really good in women's volleyball. But anyway, Congressman Subi, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate you stepping off the floor to talk with us.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.